And welcome again to another edition of A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast. My name is Michael Bates.
Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Good.
I'm Dave Douglas.
Hey, Dave. Nice to see you.
Yes. What do we got today?
We are going to be listening to the music of Miles Okazaki and having a conversation with him. And he is a very fascinating guy, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Really thrilled that he... It's going to share this music with us.
So let's get to it.
A conference call for A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast.
All right. Let's get deep.
Well, I mean, you know, it comes from three records, and they're each separated by 3 years. Mirror being the first one, and then Generations and Figurations. And I guess my first question is whether you envisioned from the very beginning that this would be a trilogy, or is there a part four coming, or how did that work for you?
Yeah, it has been 3 years between each one. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but you're right. Now, 3 years and three records. So I guess the next one, yeah, will be a couple more years. I still got a couple
right.
of years.
Right, 2015, we'll check back and make sure that you're still with the program.
Exactly.
But I mean, the idea of this, you know, the rhythmic patterns and the very structure of the music coming from patterns and symmetry of the natural world, as you've written and described it. Mm. You know, there's a lot of ways to look at that. And how mm-hmm. did you first get on that that concept?
Well, it certainly is not a original idea. I mean, it's just something that I think musicians have been trying to do since the beginning of making music. I mean, it just everything comes from nature. And I mean, plenty of musicians and artists in other fields have described what they're doing as trying to deal with nature in a deliberate kind of a way. I think a lot of the Coltrane quote where he says, the most we can do as musicians is to try to get closer to nature, and you know, mm-hmm. and or the Shakespeare quote, you know, holding a mirror up to nature and all that type of thing. But I guess what I'm trying to deal with is to find some very specific things that seem musical to me, like cycles, for example, or the way things grow, or just using structures, you know, because we use structures all the time that we kind of take for granted, you know, the way the instruments are built, the way that forms cycle around, you know, and start again, and the things that feel natural to us, certain subdivisions of the beat, certain types of rhythmic feel, certain types of harmonic movements, you know, configurations, triads, all these things are natural phenomena, you know, harmonic series and all those types of things. So I really, as a musician, I'm just always dealing with fundamentals, I guess, and when you look at fundamentals, you end up going back to nature a lot, you know. So,
like biological processes, and right? I mean, that
sure,
seems to be where you're...
biological or things that even don't have to do with humans at all, like maybe the way the Earth is moving around or something like that, you know, which mm-hmm. is going to happen whether we're here or not, you know. But there's a type of rhythm in that too.
Thank you.
what's really interesting about it is that such a fiery, you know, rhythmically engaging thing comes out of these very simple perception of the, you know, the way you're talking about nature. Right.
Well, it's powerful, powerful motivation. I mean, you can't control nature, you know. I mean, we try, but it usually wins, you know. I mean, I live in New York, so, you know, we're bombarded by nature all the time. But you know, the music I love the most feels like nature to me. Like, it's Sunday today, and on Sundays, if possible, I try to listen to Bach, you know. And to me, that music is just the perfect nature. Like, it just feels like the order is there, you know. So it doesn't even matter what instrument is playing it or anything. It's still just the choices of pitches and rhythms and where and when.
And it's very exposed and pure.
Yeah, it doesn't even, it's just actually information that conveys something. You know, he's not around. We don't have any recordings of Bach, but just the choices that he made feel good still. So,
is there a particular piece that you would recommend we check out that demonstrates that?
I really like the things that are very simple, cello suites, single line, you know. How you can really get a lot of information across with some very limited means of production.
So it seems like in the tracks that, at least in the music that we're focusing on, in these conversations, that the rhythm is a huge part of what's going on. That you're from very small modules developing a very, very complex and probably challenging for the players rhythmic world. Would you agree with that?
Somewhat. I try to keep it simple in terms of actually what's on a page, or ideally not on a page. Ideally, it's just something that you could, you know, sing to somebody. And they...
You're soft pedaling the challenging nature of your music, because I happen to be a musician myself. And I fancy myself a trumpet player, and you know, you're not fooling me for a second.
And we've seen the scores.
But you know, I would just say, all kidding aside, you know, the people in your bands are some of the most sophisticated rhythmic minds on the current scene. Miguel Zanon, Dan Weiss, Thomas Morgan, Dave Binney, you know, all the people on these recordings are exploring, I don't know if I want to say a similar territory, but, you know, it seems like the growth of this... for lack of a better word, you know, new rhythmic world in the music is something that's sort of grown up with you and all your colleagues. Do you sense that? Do you perceive it that way?
Certainly. I mean, I was lucky to just meet some great musicians when I first moved to New York who I still play with. I mean, at the point when I moved to New York, I was playing with Danny and with Miguel. You know, we didn't really even have any gigs or anything. It was now Miguel's like a MacArthur genius, and Danny's, you know, it's like these guys are quite well known now. But at that point, we were just figuring things out. terms of rhythm, it's changed a lot even since I've been on the scene in the last 15 years. I mean, the things that young guys can do now is like ridiculous, you know, technically compared to even 15 years ago. You know, some certain things have become standardized, you know.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah,
and also certain things are becoming lost also, I think, which is trying to emphasize in teaching and stuff like that. But I think this music, improvised music, where you're interacting, you know, with people is a community effort. So what's interesting to me is how people arrive at things that work together, but through totally different methods, you know, like for me, I might be somewhat methodical. I might go through like, well, let's figure out all the different ways you can do this particular thing or something like that. Whereas somebody else, you know, maybe somebody like Tyshawn Sorey or somebody like that might just be like, well, I just hear it and that's what it is and I can play it forever, you know, from my mind, you know, there's so many different ways to reach a certain level where you can negotiate other people's music and still use your own system, you know, which is what I think is really interesting. You know?
Huh. Do you find that on the players in your groups?
Sure, but the music that I write, you know, there's usually some kind of idea behind it that's fairly, you know, studied, like, you know, come from some kind of problem that I'm trying to figure out or something like that.
Mm.
But I would only tell that to somebody if they were curious about it. I usually would just present kind of the finished form.
Mm-hmm. And then let them do their thing and have their voice on it.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Because that's the payoff is having somebody look at what you did and then change it. You know, and be like, you could be like, oh, wow, that's really, you know, way, way better now. So, you know,
right.
Because, you know, somebody approaching it from an intuitive point of view about what they think they should do on their instrument, you know, that makes it reality.
Yeah, I'd say without question, for me, that's one of the most exciting parts of being an improviser and being a part of a community of musicians.
Actually wrote about this, Miles, in the liner notes for Dozens, for I guess the third record, which is called Figurations,
mm-hmm.
where you talked about the quote gradual acceptance of the balance between control and natural forces, I really resonated for me. But that's, I think, I mean, perhaps two things that aren't even really in opposition, and yet I hear the difference in this third record. Seem like somebody who's always sort of practicing and composing and working on, very specific problems, as you described them a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, do you feel like even within this framework of having more freedom, if that's the right word, within the band, you know, that you're still, you know, that's the basis of how you're exploring music?
Yeah, certainly. Let's see. For example, this last record was a live record, which is one way of me just saying, well, I'm just going to deal with, I'm just going to accept what happens on that night as a statement. You know?
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Like my favorite record, the first records I had, my favorite records, you know, the Miles Davis 1964 or Coltrane right. at the Half Note or Sonny Rollins at the Vanguard or Monkey
Man.
But all those records are all live records, you know. So.
Oh man, I just have to step in and say, man, none of that stuff is any good. Okay, I'm kidding. All right.
I know you agree. It's been wonderful. How about we hear it from Miles Davis and the gentleman? Once again, for Herbie Hancock on piano, George Coleman on tenor saxophone, Ron Carter on bass. How about it for young Tony Williams? Miles Davis.
Go on. Sorry for the interruption. I just had to be contrarian for half a second, but yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm saying totally non-controversial things, cause, you know. I like the feeling of imagining, you know, what's happening at that moment, you know. So that to me has that feeling of a greater feeling of creativity, the live recording.
I follow you on Twitter, and you're constantly posting these really, really fascinating links to musical things, and some of them are also linked to visual art and the interaction between visual ideas and musical ideas, and the way these pieces are described in your liner notes. You know, it's very much a rich, somewhat mathematical vision of how to work out these musical problems, which I think is fascinating.
I see what you mean. I think the mathematical thing, I mean, yeah, well, there's a bunch of things in there. I mean, I'm finding the social media thing kind of interesting. I just got into that recently, and I find it a fun way to send things out and see what you get back, you know, in an immediate way, you know, and I'm always kind of researching, so I just, I'm just kind of thinking out loud, you know. But mathematics, I'm not good at, really. I mean, I can manipulate numbers a certain way, but I didn't study it or anything. Like, there are some people who actually really know about mathematics, like Vijay Iyer and Francois Mouton and Jean-Michel Pilk. These guys actually have advanced degrees in science, and I'm kind of an amateur in that field. But the math involved in music is not much more than arithmetic anyway, you know. But numbers are very useful for dealing with structures, you know. It's like pitch and rhythm can be reduced to number. Now, emotion can't, you know, which is the other thing, the other side of it. So the making the leap from structure, so, you know, getting the structure together to the performance thing, which is in my, my goal in the performance is to make something emotional, you know. So that's the translation process. But in terms of the, you know, the the theory. I find that kind of endlessly fascinating. So, so yeah, I work a lot on that because, like dealing with traditional music theory is not that interesting to me because I don't find that there's a lot of things you can make just, it's kind of like a pulling yourself up by your bootstraps type of thing. Like, you keep looking into, you know, the way this person talked about counterpoint or this way, the way this person talked about counterpoint. And it's like self-referential a lot of the time. So I find it useful to go outside of music into something like, you know, let me look at, you know, let me look at the way, this person dealt with colors, you know, in painting or something. Well, the colors, you know, these colors are blended from, you know, usually primary colors, you know, three elements, you know, and there's theories about color, you know, the long history of theories about color and different types of color and additive color and subtractive color and reflected light and projected light and all these things that are, you could easily make a leap into music and say these three things are, you know, tonic, subdominant, and dominant or something, or you say that they're three different types of rhythm or, you know, rhythmic lengths or something and just just use it and see what happens. And you know, any kind of systems, there's so many systems that people have made in other fields that, you know, you can just look at. So I do that a lot just to get ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose colors are frequencies too, so.
Exactly.
The level on which.
And also there are really direct ways. You know, you can do sort of a complex math and take a, you know, sort of a long, complex way to getting to something, or you can take a more direct approach. You know, someone like Gaudi, when he would take, you know, making some of the cones or the arches for his, some of his architecture, he would just, you know, instead of doing the math, would hang sandbags from chains upside down and train, you know, and trace that.
Yeah. So. And that's a version of observational stuff, you know, or trial and error, you know, which is very direct. Yeah, if the thing collapses, it doesn't work, you know, and that happens with music too. So yeah, I definitely look for things like that. And you know, when I get stuck, go somewhere else.
That's cool.
So Miles, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, you guys. I really really appreciate the invite and all the work that's happening at Greenleaf and everything. You know, you guys are really putting out some great projects. So.
Well, it's been fantastic to talk to you and to hear this music.
Listening to the music of Miles Okazaki and his musical thoughts, and you are also listening to A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast with Michael Bates and Dave Douglas. Part of what we do here is talk about some stuff at Greenleaf Music. Anything going on over there?
Wow. There's always new projects. You know, this year we'll be, you know, hopefully getting another one of Donnie McCaslin's records out. We have this great new record that Linda O made with Ben Wendell that's coming. Wow. Also, Matt Ullery, great bassist from Chicago, composer, is doing another record. You know, we always hope to do more, and as everyone knows, in these trying economic times and difficult times for the music industry, you know, it's just, we're just trying to have the model feed the creative flow and plow everything back into the music. And so part of that is having a music company that's sort of a home for everything that, that someone does. For myself, all the touring and education events, workshops, and visiting schools, and also composition and publishing and all the records. You know, all of that is part of this big house that is Greenleaf Music, and you know, now this podcast, which is a really fun thing to do, and also I think a way for people to hear another side of the music.
Yeah, and I also wanted to say, you know, for people who haven't been to the site, I mean, there's a great blog that keeps us up to date with a lot of things, not just Greenleaf events, but a variety of different things. Mm-hmm. And
a lot of that is Jim Turk, I have to say,
who
does an amazing job at the label.
Yeah.
Anyone who's ever written to the Greenleaf help desk, you've been in personal contact with Jim Turk. Great, great person.
Can we hear some music from...
Yeah,
a new,
by all means.
Of some kind of Greenleaf artist?
I just wanted to mention that, you know, we've started to do iPhone apps for Greenleaf as well. There's a Dave Douglas app. There's a Donnie McCaslin app. And at the app, there's free music that's, you know, on a constantly changing radio cycle.
Oh, wow.
And there's also access to sheet music and good stuff like that. You know, a lot of people... have been following Greenleaf for a number of years. I started it in 2004.
Yes.
And we have this subscription series where you sign up and you get access to the entire catalog, which is starting to get somewhat
substantial. Yeah.
You know, Nicole Mitchell and Michael Bates, of course, and Linda O and Donnie McCaslin and Knee Body. There's a fantastic Knee Body
record.
Their
first one, right?
Their first record.
Yeah.
And so all of that is at the subscription series, and it's also a way to get, you know, advance videos before a record comes out, to, you know, get free tracks every now and then as they become available. There's also the first 3 years of the subscription series, we put out a track a month of unreleased material. And so we did it for 3 years. There's 36 tracks that are sort of, you know, still there available to subscribers. And it's a funny thing because I look back and some of them I've just forgotten having done them, and it's this great music that exists in this other format that's not the normal thing. That was one of the things that excited me about doing the label, was being able to release music in these
different ways,
different kinds of formats lengths. Yeah. And
well, can we hear something from one of these unreleased tracks?
This is actually something that was recorded around the time of Strange Liberation with Chris Potter, Uri Kane, James Genus, and Clarence Penn. And it's a song by my high school buddy, who is now an award-winning Broadway composer named Adam Gettle.
So you were listening to a previously unreleased track by the Dave Douglas Quintet, and the song is called Come to Jesus, and you are listening to A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast with Dave Douglas and Michael Bates. So we want to talk about a fairly obscure, to some people, artist named Herbie Nichols.
Unfortunately, somewhat obscure. I mean, I think that people know who he is, but one of the things about this music is that there are just so many heroes, and I find every now and then when you talk about somebody and you realize that people aren't that aware of that music. And so Herbie Nichols, somebody, was enormously influential to lots of us, to myself, and you know, somebody who, if you hear Roswell Rudd talk or play, you know, he's constantly talking about the importance of Herbie Nichols, because they played together, and Herbie gave him a lot of the music.
Ben Allison and the Jazz Composers Collective have done a lot of projects.
I just saw them do a bunch of previously unknown works. They did a set at the Jazz Standard. It was really cool.
So there's this great collection of Herbie Nichols' music that was on Blue Note that I'm sure it's still in print. Mm-hmm. If you haven't heard it, it's worth getting, and I think we will maybe play a little bit and taste of it here. But was there something you wanted to say about this?
I did. I was on tour this summer in Toronto and met the writer Mark Miller, who just finished a book about Herbie Nichols. It's called A Jazzist's Life.
Hmm.
And apparently that's what Herbie Nichols referred to himself as, a jazzist. And,
wow.
Interesting read, for sure.
Yeah.
And some insights about him that I didn't know much about. And, you know, he sort of viewed himself as a bit of an outsider.
Mm-hmm. There's also that great book by A.B. Spellman, Four Lives in the Bebop Business, where there was a profile of... This goes back a ways, but worth checking out as well. Cool. So this is a track of Herbie Nichols' trio. Oh, it must be late 50s. So this is a little bit of a track called The Gig. And this has been A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast. And I'm Dave Douglas.
And I'm Michael Bates.
Thank you.
See you next time.